So, Crazy Horse. In the 1870s, Crazy Horse had a legend beyond any other Native American chief. He had humiliated Custer at Little Bighorn and was part of American mythology even while living. But the circumstances of his death have never been fully resolved. And in his latest book, The Killing of Crazy Horse, Thomas Powers, as a historian and as an investigative journalist, attempts to resolve both the mystery and give us a sense of the reality behind the legend, Crazy Horse. He's in the studio with me this morning. Thomas Powers, good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, how did you get sort of obsessed, and I think obsessed is a fair characterization here, with this story? It was something that you had dreamed about getting back to, but when you finally stumbled into it, there was no stopping you.
It takes a long time to get really committed to a story. But I discovered this story and almost immediately realized that it was as if no one had bothered to write an account of the killing of John F. Kennedy.
Right.
And you arrive on the scene long after the events, and you think, why was no attempt made to explain what happened?
And what you had available to you at this point, you know, this is an event that took place in the 1870s.
1877.
And you arrive on the scene to begin investigating this, more than 100 years later.
More than 100 years later, and you mainly find things on paper. And there were things published at the time, and there were things in libraries and archives, and people wrote memoirs almost immediately after the killing of Crazy Horse. Everybody involved had a bad feeling about it.
Well, let's first of all try to paint for people the portrait of Crazy Horse himself as a legendary figure who confronted the U.S. Army in a way that no one had before and that no one really has since.
He had a great natural gift for battlefield plunging. That is, for the tactical maneuver in a cavalry conflict, a horseback conflict, that would settle things very quickly. He had a huge natural talent, and he confronted George Armstrong Custer, who had a similar talent. He won many battles in the Civil War, had a national reputation. And when Custer was killed at the Little Bighorn in 1876, the whole country was shocked in the same way that we were shocked at Pearl Harbor.
Well, even, you know, echoing beyond Pearl Harbor to Vietnam, you have in the Indian Wars, the U.S. Army, fresh from its victories and could do no wrong, the Union Army, at least in the Civil War, suddenly coming upon an adversary that was fundamentally unprepared for. Do you see echoes in the Indian Wars and what Custer confronted out on the plains with what the U.S. Army confronted in places like Vietnam and now even in this war on terror?
Well, there's some powerful parallels. The biggest parallel is the American attitude. We can do this. We know how to do this. These are ignorant, backward peoples. We can defeat them. In Vietnam, of course, that was completely false. We were the people who were arriving in small numbers and destined to go away again. But in the Great West, that wasn't the case. We came to stay.
What happened to Crazy Horse? Of course, his legend was secure even while he was alive. But he was a fugitive, or was he more of an antagonist, a leader of a nation?
He was an antagonist, and he was treated as somebody who had surrendered in war. In other words, he was protected. You couldn't prosecute him for anything he had done. But they were angry at him, and they were also afraid of him. He only spent 4 months living with whites on a reservation in northwest Nebraska. The Army became fearful that he would resume the war, and they became very agitated as rival chiefs gave them rumors and reports that Crazy Horse was about to go back out and fight again. And that's what started the chain of events that ended with his being killed.
Why was the Crazy Horse so different from the photos of the erudite chiefs of that period of time who maybe learned English, who tried to accommodate and coexist with whites in their native lands? It seems as though Crazy Horse never believed for a moment that the whites were interested in coexistence.
He had a deep spirit of resistance and defiance, and that was the thing that drove the American military just sort of crazy. The rest of these chiefs very quickly adapted to politics on the reservation and politics dealing with Washington, but not Crazy Horse. He just wouldn't be part of it.
Why is there no photo surviving of Crazy Horse? We don't really even know what he looks like.
He refused to have his picture taken, and there was only this small window, 4 months, during which a picture might have been taken. A number of photographers wanted to take his picture, but he just simply refused to do that. It was part of that general resistance. He just didn't want to be taken in.
and modernity was something that was associated with the contact with whites and the taking of Indian lands.
He didn't want to surrender. He didn't want to live on a reservation. He didn't want to give up the wild, free life of buffalo hunting on the northern plains. But he was wise enough to realize that he had to do that. All the chiefs basically understood that, and they all understood it right away. The Americans were too numerous, and there was going to be no resisting them.
So do you think his decision to surrender was a capitulation to reality that there was no way to resist this wave? Or did he have some accommodation that we'll never know about?
No, he followed the advice of his friends. He would have stayed out if it was up to him. But he asked friends. He listened to what they told him. They all said, bring your people in. He was the head of a community of about 1,000 people when he surrendered. And he did it because they wanted to. They were tired. The army used to fight the whole Indian village. The army was out, just men ready to fight. But the whole Indian village, women and children and old people, was always there. And you can't run a war with all those people on your back the whole time.
Was Crazy Horse murdered when he finally surrendered to authorities?
The authorities were ready to murder him, but they did not, in fact, at the last minute, actually murder him. But they killed him while trying to place him under arrest. And they had lied about everything that they intended to do. And it was those lies that finally, when they became apparent, in just the last minute, brought Crazy Horse to the point of resisting. And it was impossible. He was surrounded by enemies.
And so what do you think the echo is today of what happened to Crazy Horse in the custody of the people he surrendered to?
It was wrong. It was unnecessary. They all began to feel guilty about it. They all began to try and explain it away. But nobody ever gathered all that information and tried to tell the whole story. There's something to be said for just simply looking at it straight on and admitting what happened and feeling the sorrow of it.
And also knowing, and it's really kind of an operatic tragedy in some sense, that rules of law don't negate feelings of revenge and hatred in those moments when a scuffle breaks out and someone with the legendary status of Crazy Horse confronts the uniformed members of the army that he humiliated, right?
Well, the whole army remembered Custer. They were angry at him for killing Custer, and they were frightened of his ability to do it again.
And the fear of the enemy continues today. The story is told in The Killing of Crazy Horse. Thomas Powers, author of The Killing of Crazy Horse, in the studio. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And if you want to join our conversation, you know how to reach us. Head over to the site. You can check with us and producers to find out what we're working on. You can also get our iPhone app and send us photos, videos, and audio. One way to use it, show us what is the commute in your America. How do you get from your home to work? And if you don't have an iPhone, no worries. You can always use our site to upload whatever photo you want to share. Tell us what 2010 meant to you. That's one assignment we have. It's all at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee is out today. This is The Takeaway. We'll be right back.